7 o'clock, and I'd like to call this Parks and Forestry Committee meeting to order. Present tonight are all members of council, Kevin Aller, Bill Sanford, Leslie Brining, Mayor Stow. Also in the audience, we have Nick Mandros from the Environmental Council. We have Ashley Decker from the Nature Conservancy, Erica Burry from the Olander Park System. We have Josette Schneider and Jeff Clegg from Toledo Memorial Park, Danny Fuller, as well as Brian McCann and some other, looks like students in the audience. The reason that we called this meeting, I asked Nick Mandros from the Ohio Environmental Council to do a presentation similar to something that I saw at a Green Ribbon event about natural areas and the oak openings and economic development. So I asked him, it was pretty interesting, and I thought you guys would all enjoy it, and I'd also like to get us all on the same page about what's going on now in Haroon Park and what should be going on in Haroon Park. My vision for tonight is that Nick and Ashley and Erica are going to, I think mostly Nick, are going to give us a presentation on oak openings, natural areas. And with that, I would introduce, looks like Erica is going to introduce the crew.
First of all, thank you all very much for making time for us to be here today. My name is Erica Burry. I'm the director of the Olander Park System, but I also have the honor to be the chair of the Oak Openings Green Ribbon Initiative. We are really excited to be here today and talk to you about how we can collaborate as organizations. There's a lot of partners in this group, and we'd love to have you join in as one of them. The Oak Openings region as a whole, just to give you a quick update, a reminder if you're not familiar, is a natural area that historically encompassed over 1,300 square miles of northwest Ohio and southeastern Michigan, characterized by sandy soils, and many of you might have sand in your yard, so you're familiar with that sand, and also some heavy clay. So if you live further out west, you have soils that stay wet till June and then dry up like a rock in August. So both of those characteristics are really unique to our area. There are lots of areas that have sand, there are lots of areas that have clay, but the combination is really unique to Northwest Ohio. That clay holds the water in the sand for longer periods of time and creates a huge diversity of habitats that are globally rare. So that means that they're actually more rare than rainforests in the world. So think about that. In Sylvania, we have an ecotype more rare than the cloud forest, right? And what's also really cool about that is that diversity means that rather than having to climb a mountain to see different habitats, you just have to walk 15 steps over, right, to see a completely different group of plants and animals. It's pretty awesome, and we're very excited to be working in that area, and you guys should be really proud of being part of that community, and I think it's a great opportunity to promote yourselves as being at the center of the Oak Openings region. So, just some statistics for where we are and the work that we're doing. There is, out of that 1,300 square miles, there's about 5% of that habitat still remaining intact, and only about less than 1% of that is currently protected by conservation agencies and private landowners. So we have our work cut out of it. We're obviously never going to save the whole thing, but our goal is to make sure that we have pieces that are connected, so we're creating corridors for things like birds and animals to make their way back and forth between Ohio and Michigan. You know, we're crossing boundaries here too. So that adds a whole other layer of complexity to our work. Our goal is to protect and restore 68,000 acres, and we're about a third of the way there. And we already have a huge group of people who are helping us, and we're kind of enlisting your help in those efforts as well. And we'll talk a little bit about what that help can look at. We're not looking at monetary, you have to make a donation. But your participation and even just thoughts and ideas and listening is great. So partners, including meal opening, so they actively participate in all the activities that we do. VG City Parks, believe it or not, there's oak openings in VG, and Wood County Parks are both involved, and the Black Swamp Conservancy. In terms of citizen groups, we have the Toledo National Association as part of our organization, the Oak Openings Region Conservancy, and the Oak Openings Region Wild Ones, which is the native landscaping advocacy group, our partners. And we have over 350 local landowners that are also committed to preserving and protecting their private property to maintain and preserve the Oak Openings region. So it's not just an agency effort. We are really working to engage private landowners. Manikin Smith and Toledo Memorial Parks are two of our public sector, private sector partners. Really excited to have them involved. And then we have a bunch of folks in Michigan. So as I said, we Oak Openings extends into Michigan. So we're working north of the border as well with the Huron-Clinton Metro Parks, Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Michigan Nature Association, Southeast Michigan Conservancy, Bedford Township, and then a group of archers from the Tomahawk Archers. They have a hunt club just over the border that they're participating in as well. So big scope of agencies, private partners. We are working really hard to do this all together. Something I was asked to really talk about too was why does the Oneida Park System in particular participate? We recognized very early on that the Oak Openings was an important part of the work that we would be doing in conservation. We have a really important partnership with the school district for managing the Savannah behind Southview Savannah. If you haven't been there, it's really awesome. That's one of the last perfect locations in Slovenia that is an example of what an Oak Savannah would look like, even though it's 7 acres. And being part of this partnership, we don't have a big budget. So unlike Metro Parks, I can't dedicate money to projects that we're doing throughout the region beyond in our own space. However, we do things like help with outreach and education events. We've been partners on grants in terms of offering vocal support or letters of support. We have done a number of things that don't involve actually contributing funds. We also have had the opportunity to use the interagency restoration team, which TNC, the Nature Conservancy, manages, to do some work on our property. So that's one way that we are investing in the work that's going on in our community. So, I just wanted to say again, thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. We would love to have you as partners. One of the best things you can do is just get excited. We want you to be enthusiastic about where we are and where you live and how awesome it is, because it is really awesome. And also to just think about how decisions that you make for the community and how they impact your natural environment and the habitat we have here, because positive impacts on the environment have positive impacts on people, whether it's economically or health, multiple ways. So just, we ask that you keep that in mind going forward. So I would like to introduce Ashley Becker. Oh, I'm sorry, Nick's going first. And Nick Mandros is with the Ohio Environmental Council, and he's going to kind of give you a rundown on some more specific ways that you guys can work. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for letting me be here and speak with you today. My name is Nick Mandros. I am the regional director of the Ohio Environmental Council. The Ohio Environmental Council, we're a statewide environmental advocacy organization based out of Columbus. We do a lot of policy work throughout the state, focusing on clean water, air, and protecting public lands. Ohio has we're right at the bottom of all the states per capita for public land protection. So we look to try to find unique ways for us to trees and having some oak leaf on your new signage. And so I think that is all very, very timely. Because in addition to, these natural spaces as to their value that they provide as places to gather, to recreate and to learn about nature, these parks represent a public investment that pays its returns in a lot of different ways, including helping with clean water and air, detain stormwater, harbor wildlife, and enhance property values. And so these parks, they add value to the community that is right around them, and they really can be vital to recruiting and retaining talent, employees, and small businesses that realistically could go anywhere. Why are they going to come and be here in Sylvania? So, why natural? We have a lot of groomed and maintained areas already. It seems to be serving its purpose in a lot of different ways. But, there is a case to go natural and native with a lot of these investments that you are making and that you're looking at trying to make infrastructure investments. To begin with, minimal maintenance costs. So these native spaces, these native plants, they don't need the same attention to maintenance that other spaces do. In fact, to put them in, it costs many times less than it would cost to, say, seed a lot of grass. So mowing costs, watering, fertilizers, pesticides, a lot of those are removed, has a really great positive impact on water quality, air quality, the biodiversity of the area, and soil health. It works to prevent flooding, controls soil erosion, and it really has this reintroduction of this sense of place. And Erica really talked about the oak openings being an extremely unique biodiverse area. There aren't any other oak openings in the world, and so that sort of sense of place that you can develop from being in those places and understanding the heritage of the area that you live in and where you may have come from or the people that may have lived here before you, grounds you and kind of can set you apart from other places. But it also provides food and habitat for wildlife like butterflies, birds, frogs, turtles, and other animals. So some of the problems that people often talk about with these native spaces is, we got to get the public to buy it, right? You can have a good plan, but if the public doesn't appreciate or understand, then, you're likely going to fail. And so this public acceptance is just as important as the ecological services that they provide. A researcher out of Michigan University, her name is Joan Nasser, looked at this sort of thing and was looking at native spaces and said, if a lot of folks see, a rain garden or a specific field and they say, something like that's overgrown. Well, how do you sort of correlate those two and maybe justify the native plantings that are out there? And really, it all came down to this very thing, was cues to care. When people recognized that things were supposed to be there, right? A sort of natural ecosystem within orderly frames, provided that folks could understand that was intentional, right? Rather than it was just left to be forgotten. So structures like fences, sidewalks, signs cue the individual that that's supposed to be that way. It's supposed to look like that, right? Where on the left, it has a very specific design that, there's passed this. At the Zoom, the Zoo, as Erica has said, is a partner on this, and they do a lot of work on habitat restoration and education around a variety of different conservation issues, but this in particular is their pollinator initiative. And a number of years ago, it got mowed down after a number of residents complained. Part of the issue was and has been that, you know, if you aren't educated and understand and don't have this piece of care, you will conflate what is the intention of what it is that we're trying to do with this. So, one, you know, in particular, a lot of state departments of transportation are looking at this very thing, trying to figure out how do we reduce maintenance costs on these vast, you know, miles upon miles of right-of-ways that we have to maintain. You know, is there a value that we're going to be able to identify within changing our maintenance procedures? And not only were they able to find significant savings in just altering their maintenance, but when they coupled that maintenance change with native wildflowers, folks in those communities, when they polled them, overwhelmingly, they were interested in paying more money for a better view of their community as they were driving to and from home, to and from work. So I just want to talk a little bit about just the value of parks in general. The Metro Parks, a couple of years ago, worked with the Trust for Public Lands to basically look at their, to look at what is the value that the Toledo Metro Parks contributes to its little area community. And so there are a variety of different values that they contribute to. So, to begin with, they attract tourists, it enhances opportunities for outdoor recreation, healthcare cost savings, boost in economic development, it reduces stormwater costs, cleans the air, and enhances property values. And so, they pulled this information to residents in the Louis County. 94% said that they believe that it improves the quality of life. 90% said that it improves their health. 92% that it increases and retains visitors and businesses and residents. 82% said that it improves property values. But what really what they came down to is they went and they identified how much that this contributed to the local economy. And these aren't big numbers. You know, this is a lot of, there's over $100 million that this little Metro Parks contributes to the local economy here in Northwest Ohio. And so that is a nationwide trend in that we're looking at these native spaces that we have differently because people want to be located in areas and that they can recreate, that they can enjoy. They want to live near parks and be able to really value their areas once they live. And so, now, this is just one of, and then there's an additional $1.3 million in property tax. I'm sorry, not property taxes, yes. So, also there's a significant contribution that has on stormwater. And, you know, we all know that water's important to us here in Northwest Ohio. We're struggling with an algae bloom in Lake Erie every year. You know, we all know that there are a variety of different sources of that pollution, but many of which are outside of the scope that you all can control. But there are urban contributions to that problem in the lake. And because of that, you know, we look to invest in natives to help with that, those issues, right? And so grass is good, right? But natives can be a lot better. This is a diagram called Walt's diagram. It really shows kind of prairie plants and the sort of the root structures. On the far left is your typical grass, bluegrass that you use in your lawn. The rest of these, again, are native prairie plants. And so, as you can see, the root structures are extremely different. Native plants are really good at removing nutrients and other pollutants. They remove heavy metals, pesticides, solvents, oils. They and not only do they remove those contaminants from the soil, but they also hold the soil in and help better with erosion. When winter comes, about 30% of that root structure dies off, and that allows the nutrients that may be on the top and these contaminants to fall deeper into the soil and will also help draw that groundwater down so that it is not sort of pulled into the runoff from the grass, right? And so these same areas are, again, cheaper to maintain. From what I understand, you all at Karoon maintain at least once a week. I don't have the specific figures on what it all costs for you all, but Toledo Public Schools, for example, had done an assessment of how much they spent on maintenance costs. They spent about $5,200 per day. And that's just maintaining green space. And so, looking at trying to convert some of those areas into native species can look to save some money. But I think that, finally, probably maybe most importantly, or just as important, is its role in wildlife. Right here in Sylvania, we're kind of among a chain of metro parks and different parks in the area, right? And so, these birds and animals, other animals, they don't care that we have municipal boundaries. And so they're going to go from Olander to prairie to Secor to wildwood. And they will come here in Sylvania as well. And so what you can potentially see is that this area would become more of a habitat for different wildlife. We, for the last 10 years or so, have been introduced to the biggest leap in birding. Black Swan Bird Observatory has held this event since 2010. They've done an economic analysis on what that looks like. And so that doesn't just sort of happen along the coast in like McGee Marsh and those areas there. Folks who are looking to bird, they know where the birds are. And this is still that corridor that those migratory birds travel through. And so it is realistic to think that the more that you all can lend yourselves as a birding community and a conservation community, that you will attract that more of that business here as well. That goes really from my understanding, you all, there is a some apartments that are being built right adjacent to there as well. So all of that is going to go into, you know, the quality of life that people experience here in Sylvania. I think there could be potentially an opportunity for folks to really celebrate their community and where they're from. Without necessarily a significant investment from the people here in the city, there are a variety of different funding opportunities to take advantage of this type of thing. I'm going to, real quick, bring up Ashley Becker from the Nature Conservancy and Green Ribbon Initiative, and she's going to kind of talk a little bit more about how they are involved in some of the other projects. Allow you guys to, if we have time, ask a couple of questions.
Okay. Hi, my name is Ashley Decker. I'm with the Nature Conservancy, and my specific role is Green Ribbon Initiative Partnership Specialist. So I get the honor of doing communication on behalf of the partnership, and I champion much of our outreach and education programming. I'm going to skip through some of these slides just for the sake of time. I want to let you know that through the partnership, there are a variety of resources to help communities through the restoration journey, and educational programs that help immerse the community within the natural areas and garner that sense of place that Nick spent part of their time talking about.
How do I? I can do it for you.
You can do it for me?
Yes.
Okay, so a couple of those programs are called Adopt the Natural Area, Blue Week. We have a landowner registry program. And a few examples of how communities are using those resources. Olander Park, for example, has contracted our interagency restoration team. This is a team of Oak Openings experts. They have the equipment and the knowledge to come in and efficiently restore natural areas. And by that, I mean remove invasive species primarily. Haroon Park, it has the potential to become a really beautiful floodplain. It's currently overcrowded by honeysuckle and autumn olive. I went with Katie a couple times to take a look at the park. But the potential is there, and this crew has the capabilities of doing it quickly and effectively. Olander Park has taken advantage of that, and they've contracted the interagency restoration team for that kind of work. Toledo Memorial Park has recently joined the Green Ribbon Initiative and has taken part in our native plant materials exchange program. So they're converting much of a couple acres of their green space into native Oak Openings prairie. They came to me and said, we have two goals. One is habitat restoration, and the other is community engagement. And they think that by doing this, that they will bring the public to their park and make it a better place to live. Ottawa Hills has recently joined the Green Ribbon Initiative and are taking advantage of the community outreach programs. They've included Adopt a Natural Area in their newsletters and now have two classrooms that have adopted an area. We do invasive species removal and native plantings, water quality sampling with these students. And we have a group of residents that have also adopted an area and are taking ownership of this space and helping to restore it. So the community is taking pride in the efforts that Ottawa Hills is doing, restoring the floodplain. I have two maps on here that I'll quickly show you, and these maps are both to show you the unique place that Sylvania holds within the region and how your location opens up doors to funding opportunities. The first map shows our priority conservation areas. These are areas that the Green Ribbon Initiative has identified as areas where we can do the greatest benefit for the greatest number of species. So you can see we have a Sylvania PCA and an Ottawa River PCA, both of which Sylvania is a part of. That opens the doors to participating in grants with partners of the Green Ribbon Initiative and taking advantage of the resources that we've developed. The next slide. Maybe the next one. own good, but plans have been written to restore these areas. And they're based on various watersheds. These plans are called the nine element plans. And Sylvania is written within, is written in these plans. They're identified in critical area one of the Haldeman Ottawa ditch. More information than you need. But being identified as part of those plans opens the doors to funding. So Ottawa Hills wrote a grant to do some floodplain restoration and received money from the EPA to restore 15 acres. So just that was a really, really quick overview, but I hope that this is just the beginning of several conversations to come where we can share more information about restoration within Green Park and how that can be a stepping stone for Sylvania to jump on board with this greater movement within the Philippines and the Lake Erie watershed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley and Nick and Erica for your presentation, and we're running a little late, so I'm quickly going to adjourn the Parks and Forestry Committee meeting at 7:35.